Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
In the ongoing academic quest to prove or disprove that animals are capable of cognition, the cognition group got a bump forward when a study showed that wolves were capable of following a human gaze. The ability to do that, to look towards something that somebody else was already looking at, has been considered a sign of cognition. Why? I have no idea, but it's one of those tests that somebody proposed. It got into the literature, and everybody seems to take it as gospel. And so if you want to prove that an animal is capable of cognition, you have to prove that the animal does what the test says that only humans do. Now, the wolves that were used in the study could hardly be considered wild animals in the normal sense. They were born in captivity, they were raised by humans, so relative to wild wolves, in behavioral terms, they were coming from a different place. What the study showed was that the wolves didn't look at what humans were looking at if the animals were behind a wall, but if they came around the wall, they would look in the same direction where the humans were looking. What I like about these studies is what it tells us about animals' ability to A, figure out what it is we want to prove, and then give it to us. The tests in cognition in animals remind me very much of the intelligence test given to kids. It's not really an intelligence test. It's a test of, A, your ability to think like the tester, and then to give the tester what he or she wants. So, for example, when the traditional Wechsler intelligence test is given to kids with autism, the majority of them do very poorly. But when they're given a test that reflects the way they think, they can do very well. So one test will conclude that these children have below average intelligence and that some of them are severely impaired, and another test designed to reflect the way they think and to reflect their perception proves they're quite normal and sometimes even superior intelligence. And we do the same thing with animals. We're so caught up in this idea of the superior intelligence that it just doesn't even register that following another's gaze might not play that big a role in species that aren't visually oriented like we are. That maybe, for example, an animal with motion-sensitive vision rather than detail vision would be more likely to follow motion. Or maybe that same animal who has more motion-sensitive vision may have an extremely acute sense of smell. Now, it seems to me that if you think about this that way, and you think about particularly how big a role scent plays in communication in animals, particularly in canines, then you can see that evolution has done a marvelous thing. It has put the nose of our domestic species, who don't see the world the same way we do, right between their eyes. So they can point their noses and appear to be looking at what we're looking at, which is a good thing for them, because it's possible that if they couldn't do that, we'd think they were stupid. I remember as a kid writing an essay that earned me the right to take some sort of certification test. And if I did well in that test, I would win some sort of a prize. But the essay contest and the certification was sponsored by one of those self-ordained patriotic groups. And this was back during the Cold War, and these groups had an agenda. There was no question about it. When I went to take the certification test, I was well prepared, but I found myself facing a moral dilemma. I knew the answers they wanted. It was pretty doggone obvious. They wrote the test so that if you didn't give them their answers, you would fail. And my dilemma was, should I tell them what they wanted to hear? Should I give them what was, in no uncertain terms, their party line back to them on the off chance that I might win a prize? Or should I pick none of the above? Because the absolutes they gave me to choose from, even to a little kid like me, they were too simplistic to be real. But alas, I was a little kid, and the lure of the prize was more important to me than any ethical values. So I gave them the answer they wanted, only to discover that the prize was to troop to the other side of town to a big auditorium and a big memorial and listen to a bunch of boring speakers spout this same stuff for what seemed to me like hours. And I think about that. I think about that when I read about these tests. And I think, do these wolves make that kind of decision? Even the dogs in some of our classes, do they say, okay, this makes absolutely no sense. This is just so out of context, it doesn't even register in my reality. But I know they want it, and I'll give it to them, because maybe I'll get a prize. And then when they give it to us, they get the prize, and the prize really isn't worth it. Do they think, as I thought even way back then, this whole idea of being true to yourself and where that comes into play? And how far do you go in an attempt to please somebody else before you say, this just isn't working? It might work for you, it might make you feel good, but it's not working for me. I can't do this anymore. The good news there is, it seems to me that that's an individual choice. And in order to do that, it also seems to me that that requires cognitive ability. So maybe that's the first thing we can say about all of those misbehaved animals out there. They're proving their cognitive ability. And maybe the reason we find turning them around so challenging is that we have to prove the same thing. And not only that, that we're capable of anticipating their needs and finding a way to fulfill their needs in a way that makes sense to them. This can be hard to do, particularly if we're not in the habit of doing it. If we're in the habit of expecting them to A, guess what our needs are, and B, give us what we want, the idea of recognizing what their needs are and how to mesh the two, just the thought of it, you know, makes your brain ache.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.